Dale Carnegie said that the hardest thing in the world to do is to speak in front of an audience. But he was only half right. Actually, the hardest thing to do is sing in front of a live audience. And I teach people how to do that every day. I'd like to show you how to turn fear into positive energy that'll captivate one listener or 1,000. And though I say stage fright, I don't necessarily mean that there has to be a stage involved. You might be speaking with your boss or talking to your biggest customer or simply walking in through your front door an hour later than you had told your spouse. Later on in this session, we'll be doing some exercises that'll require you to close your eyes. So when we get there, I suggest that you find a nice, quiet place where you feel comfortable and safe. So even though you're not here to be neurosurgeons, I'll still need to begin my discussion of stage fright with a very basic explanation of how the autonomic nervous system works. When you get in a situation that triggers intense fear, your body sends a bolt of extra energy to you to help escape from that imagined danger. For example, let's say that you're a kid walking down the street on the way home from school. You end up taking a shortcut through an alley. While you're in the middle of that alley, you hear a sound that somehow convinces you that Jack the Ripper is alive and well and after your hide. You get this intense rush of blood to your head that makes you feel both dizzy and turbocharged at the same time. You run like the wind, faster than you've ever did in gym class, out of that alley. And when you finally get to a safe spot, you look around, and out of the alley comes the cutest little doggy you ever saw. And after he licks your little hand, you realize that Jack the Ripper was actually Fluffy the dog. It was the autonomic nervous system that gave you the extra energy you needed to run as fast as you could to get out of that alley. Haven't you ever heard stories of people doing unbelievable superhuman strength feats in times of crisis? Like the guy who lifted one end of his car up in the air when his daughter was trapped underneath? Well, that was the autonomic nervous system again, coming into play and allowing him to do 10 seconds of unbelievable lifting in order to save his baby. I believe that stage fright is actually a fabulous thing, and that somewhere along the lines, we gave it a negative connotation and somehow it stuck. I, however, see it as the body getting us ready to do something great, giving us the power to rise above what we normally do and allowing us the opportunity to have moments of superhuman strength so that we can rise up, be more, and achieve incredible results in impossibly difficult situations. Let me tell you a story of two superstars who shared the exact same feelings of stage fright, and yet how amazingly different each situation turned out. Backstage with Barbara Streisand, she's incredibly nervous. Her stomach's in knots. She's feeling totally nauseous. Her hands are sweaty, and she's beginning to perspire heavily. All she can think of is, I hate performing live. My stomach is killing me. I'm going to throw up. I can't go on. Why do I put myself through this? Backstage with Bruce Springsteen, he's totally nervous. His stomach is in knots. He's feeling absolutely nauseous. His hands are sweaty, and he's beginning to perspire heavily. He's thinking, my stomach is killing me. I'm going to throw up. I'm ready for the stage. The fans are out there waiting, and I am ready to give them the performance of their lives. Two superstars, the exact same physical symptoms, and two completely different mindsets. Barbara attached the nervous feelings to a negative. She felt that the bad feelings were going to prevent her from singing and performing her absolute best. Bruce, however, decided that until his hands were sweating, his heart pounding, and his stomach in knots, and until he was ready to vomit, not until then was he really ready to take the stage and shine like the superstar that he is. Bruce had the right idea, by the way. You can't just walk out in front of hundreds of thousands of people and offer them the Bruce Springsteen that had a can of tuna for lunch with no mayonnaise. They came to see the boss. And the boss runs on a higher octane level than your average person. The boss is supercharged and superhuman, exactly what the autonomic nervous system is there to help create. Think back to a time when you went on a date with someone that you were absolutely crazy about. You waited all week and now it was finally Friday night. Over and over, you imagined every aspect of the date. What she was wearing, what she said, how you held her hand, what happened when you kissed her goodnight. Now the big day's finally arrived and you're on your way to her house. The car's clean and waxed and you've consumed about a half dozen different breath mints. As you drive, you start to feel a little rumbling in your stomach. You start to get even a little bit more excited because you can't remember the last time that you even had these amazing butterflies dancing around in your tummy. The fact is, when it comes to butterflies in the stomach, most of us only have positive things to say. I remember a woman who told me that after 25 years of being married to the same guy, she would do just about anything to rekindle the butterflies she felt for a hubby when they'd first started dating. My point here is that there's no difference between the positive butterflies in the tummy feeling and the just swallowed an alien feeling you get when you're nervous. The only difference is the way you attach a positive or negative imprint to it. So the first step to overcoming stage fright is to realize that it's a positive thing and look forward to the feelings in the same way you feel excited about something great about to happen to you. Easier said than done? Let's talk a little bit more about stage fright, and then I'll give you some specific exercises to accomplish that task. So what's going on in your head when you get nervous? What are you really thinking? What's the worst thing that can happen to you if you get up in front of an audience and start to speak? Well, I guess the worst thing is having the audience really hate your guts. Because when they're disinterested or disappointed in you, it of course makes you feel horrible. You feel like a loser. You wish that you'd never, ever put your neck that far out on the chopping block. Whether or not you're conscious of it, too many times before you get up and speak, you've created a very negative perception of your audience. You've somehow attributed all of the worst traits in the world to this gang of lynchmen waiting with a noose, and it has your name on it. Well, this type of negative perception can never lead to confidence. If you've already imagined failure, it's too late to succeed. Once that little voice in your head starts feeding you negative lies, you can't help but feel apprehensive and nervous. So the only thing to do is to change your perception of the audience from negative to positive, and the rest is a piece of cake. So let's do a simple visualization exercise. Close your eyes and imagine yourself standing on a stage with 100 people sitting in the audience in front of you. Imagine the look on some of their faces. Are they smiling? Frowning? Are they sitting still in their seats? Or are they fidgeting all around? Are they happy or sad? Do you know these people? Are they friends of yours? Have you spoken to them before? If so, do you remember the last time you saw them? Do you remember how they reacted the last time you spoke to them like this? Did they like you? Now go ahead and open your eyes. If I assumed the worst answer to every question I just asked, the scenario would be you on stage with 100 sad people in the audience who already don't like you even though you've never met, they're fidgeting all around in their seats, and they never, under any circumstances, want to be your friend. Now close your eyes again and let's turn that into a positive visualization. There you are again, back on stage, and there's indeed about 100 people in the audience. They look very sad. They're all frowning and some of them look like they're about to cry. But something strange happens and suddenly, one by one, they begin to smile. Some of them even start to laugh. You thought that you didn't recognize them, but now you realize that they're your buddies from Sigma Delta Nu, your old fraternity. They look so good and young and healthy. You were the president of that fraternity, and for 4 sweet years on that campus, you were God. Okay, open your eyes. It's clear that there are often two ways to look at any situation. When you're nervous about the speech you're about to make, you've got to continually remind yourself that you make your own reality. Your fear has nothing to do with the truth. It's based on choosing to envision a negative scenario. But the choice is yours. You can imagine the best or the worst. How long would a fortune teller who only predicts the worst stay in business? Not long. So why do you want to be an out-of-work soothsayer? Before you get up on stage or stand in the conference room or get down on one knee to propose to your fiancé, close your eyes and take a few minutes to visualize the absolute best scenario you can imagine. If you start to see anything negative, simply change your perception. You are the author of this book, and you decide the plot and the ending. No matter what the actual outcome is, you do yourself no harm walking into the situation having already imagined the best results. Not that long ago, in preparation for a son that my wife and I were expecting, a beautiful baby shower was planned. It was going to be at a lovely home of one of our friends. The food was picked, the guest list set, the invitations went out, the cake was ordered, everything was going to be perfect. Everything was set. I decided to write a song that my 7-year-old daughter would sing to her mommy and the baby-to-be. It was kind of a duet, actually, for my daughter and me. It was called Brother, Son. Now, for 2 weeks prior to the shower, I tried to find the right time to record it with my daughter in the studio, but our schedules just didn't allow for the recording. So that morning, I decided we'd just have to sing it live for the guests. That day, however, my daughter suddenly developed a bad case of the "I'm not singing that song today for anything in the world and you can't make me do it-itis." So right before I left for the shower, I quick had to transpose the song into a key that I knew I could at least sing it in if I had to do it by myself. And I threw the portable keyboard in the trunk of the car. Later that day at the shower, after the food and the presents were opened, it was my time to sing the song. After the promise of a daddy and me trip to Disneyland, I even convinced my daughter to get up there with me and try to sing it together. We did. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. The women were sobbing before I got to the second verse. They loved it. 30 women came up to me afterwards and voted that the song and I were up for the Best Husband of the Year award. One woman said to me that she was amazed at my lack of nervousness. She marveled at my comfort level and said that she could barely speak in front of people, let alone sing a song with an unpredictable 7-year-old by her side. I told her that I knew it was going to be perfect, and I did. I had visualized my silly little song bringing the house down. Not because it was a classic, but because I knew it was perfect for that moment in time. Did I have to close my eyes and actually envision it happening before the party started? Yes. But the truth is, I never expect a negative reaction to any presentation I give. And if you think that has anything to do with ego, you are way off the mark. It simply has to do with a positive mindset that doesn't allow for the possibility of failure. The performance wasn't going to be perfect, far from it as a matter of fact, but it was going to be perfect unto itself, a moment in time that would express my daughter's love to a brother she had yet to meet. Perfect in a place where good and bad doesn't even come into play. I had created my own reality, and the actual events just fell in line as if I really was a soothsayer. Nervous? About what? I knew it was going to be perfect. When you get nervous, your breathing pattern begins to change. You start taking a lot more shorter, higher breaths. As the nervousness grows, your breathing begins to get faster and actually starts to make you hyperventilate. The faster your breathing becomes, the more you end up taking shallow breaths that don't bring enough air to supply the need. So let me offer you a breathing exercise that'll help you when you get nervous. By the way, you can practice this particular exercise anywhere, even in the car, as long as you keep your eyes on the road and concentrate on your driving and your breathing. I call it breathing by the numbers. So take a nice deep breath and fill up your tummy like you have a balloon in there. You remember the diaphragmatic breathing I've been talking to you about all the way since session 2? Remember to breathe in through your nose, as always. Then, as you exhale, count from 1 to 10 very slowly, like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All the time that you were counting, make sure that your stomach is still very slowly moving in back to its normal position. Do this for a few minutes. And the goal here is to slow down your breathing. By forcing you to take deep breaths and count to 10, I'm slowing down the frequency of the breaths, and therefore reducing your risk of hyperventilation. After those few minutes, you should feel like your breathing returns to its normal rate. And by then, you'll have noticed that a substantial decrease in your level of nervousness has taken place. Now let's try it again for a few times. Ready? Put the machine on pause and give it a try. When it comes to stage fright, I've always believed in one very strong cure. It's called preparation. I'd like you to finish this sentence for me. I get nervous before I speak in public because I'm afraid that... How many of you said something like, I'm afraid that I'll make a fool out of myself, or I'm afraid that I just won't do that well and I'll embarrass myself? Well, my friends, whatever happened to the simple notion of practice makes perfect? If every day I practice swimming 500 laps in 30 minutes and I succeed in doing this 20 days in a row, on the 21st day, I really shouldn't be questioning my ability to perform the same task. What's the point of being nervous? Nervous of what? Nervous of doing as well as you did yesterday? Shouldn't the level of nervousness decrease the more you consistently achieve the same goal? If I've already proven to myself that I can accomplish the task, my doing it again is merely an element of time. Today, tomorrow, Saturday, whenever. So maybe the main reason you're actually scared is because you know deep down inside that you're really not prepared. You didn't do everything you could to get ready. But the good news is, the harder you work, the better you get. And this is true in preparing for any kind of important verbal communication. The hardest part of school wasn't the tests, it was preparing for the tests. If you studied and you were ready to go, taking the test was actually a relief. If you didn't prepare and study, taking the test was a nightmare or a failure. Well, the same thing can be said about communication. The better prepared you are, the less likely you are to be nervous. Without that preparation, you could be left with a big case of the what ifs. What if I'm late? What if the client's upset because I'm late? What if he's so upset because I'm late that he won't even listen to my presentation? Well, what if the sky falls on my head while we're still talking? Well, maybe instead of surrendering to a bad case of the what ifs, you could just prepare a simple checklist to see if you've done all that you can do to actually be prepared. Aside from the things that should always be on your preparation checklist, like doing your daily vocal warm-ups, and doing your breathing exercises, and any specific visualizations that we've learned along the way, your checklist should be full of specific things that you can easily do. Here are some examples to get you started. 1. Get detailed directions to where you're going. I know that sounds simple, but I get very, very upset when I'm driving someplace and I get lost. 2. Drive there the day before and see how long the journey takes. Everybody doesn't have satellite navigation in their car. 3. Find a way into the space and sit there when nobody's around. 4. Practice your speech by offering it to a safe friend. Tell it to the dog or the mirror. If you can't get your dog to agree to a substantial raise, make sure that you at least get him to lick your face and shake your hand. 5. Record your communication on a tape recorder and then listen back as if you were an audience member. Listen to the pace, pitch, melody, volume, and tone. then decide what changes you need to make, and then record yourself again until you like what you hear. 6. If you're speaking for a large group, you might find it calming to get there before anyone else. Sit in the back of the audience and kind of watch each person as they come in. Seeing them enter one by one keeps you focused on the fact that you'll be speaking to people, not an unknown gang of disbelievers. Also, be more curious about who they are, why they're here. Be open to feeling and understanding their desires and needs. These people are individuals with friends and families, unique stories, and individual histories. By the way, this is really one thing I do for myself. Before I give a speech or get up on stage for a seminar, I love to sit in the back of the room and pretend that I'm anonymous. I say hi to anyone that looks at me, and I listen to what they're talking about. I let their excitement get me excited. I remember one time I was standing in the back of the audience at a Tony Robbins seminar in Kona, Hawaii. Tony always has a lot of singing and dancing during the morning warm-up routine, and I knew that the next thing up was a kind of a sing-along. Now, right next to me was this trainer, one of his trainers, a lovely-looking girl with a super-duper sweet face. She had absolutely no idea that I was there as Tony's vocal coach. She looked at me standing by myself, and she asked me if I needed a partner. At that point, I just decided to have a little fun. I pretended to be the shyest guy there and said that when I was young, I was always told to shut up and that my mother and father both said that I was tone deaf. But that deep inside, I had a dream about singing, but that I was just too afraid to try. She took my hand, and just as everyone in the audience started singing, I started singing at the top of my lungs in the most beautiful voice that I could muster. Well, this caught her completely off guard, and she kept looking over at me and wondering what to say. Finally, she said, "You have a beautiful voice." I said, "Do you really think so?" "Yes," she said. At that point, I actually had to go and prepare myself for a lecture I was giving to the master trainers in another hall in a little while. So I simply said, "Thanks for holding my hand, and maybe you could come to room B at about noon. I'm giving a little lecture." She said, "Okay," and then I left. When I took the stage later at my lecture, after a very special introduction, and saw that girl's face smiling in the audience, nervousness was the very last thing on my mind. The little joke I played was more than enough to keep my mind preoccupied with fun, instead of being worried about what I was going to say to my audience of trainers. All right now, I've given you a number of things to start your preparation list. Add anything you want to make it work for you. I'm confident that the techniques and ideas we've talked about in this session will help you turn your stage fright energy into star-like presence and charisma. I look forward to someday being in the room listening to you speak, both of us having butterflies in our stomach, only adding to the excitement and the anticipation of something truly great to come.